Okay.
Hey, I basically started out with Bonnie. I didn't really know anything about symmetry or what supersymmetry is. So that's why I'm kind of doing the introduction, because just the basics was really amazing. She started explaining the very basic things, like she took a square or a triangle and we would flip or rotate it, and how we would end up with the same thing that we started off with. She also took a pencil case and explained to us how to flip or rotate it and get a completely or get the opposite answer. Then we looked at symmetry in things like mirrors, art and music, which Francesca can tell you more about, plants and animals, the human body, crystals, arrows of time, which Dad Nina will tell you more about, and the spin, and supersymmetry, which Sarah will be She then explained matrices to us, which is like building a small little computer. And for example, she took two matrices and we got an answer and she swapped them around and we got a completely different answer. It's really amazing. Then I read up a little bit about magnetic and electric currents and the symmetry between them. Like in moving an electric current, it produces a magnetic field. And if a changing magnetic field that would generate an electric current.
it's strange, you know. But I try to do my best. So, art is the expression of human feeling, while symmetry is the expression of human rational. So these are things apparently in a musician, but how can they be related? Many musical compositions present symmetry in this structure. We have an example here in this image, the DSS symphony by Bach, and we see that there are a lot of translations of the same pattern, so that is repeated many times with changes, or played upside down, or played backwards, and this allows the author to do a world symphony. But the connection between art and symmetry becomes even more evident in the field of poetry, not only music. The human aesthetic is strongly rooted in pattern and repetition. We see symmetry in form in most arts as well as in science. That's because I chose this story. The artist or poet seeks symmetry in many ways. The method, the first thing, is a subtle counting, and words chosen are a concise reflection of the experience of the poet. He seeks to give this poem a contained elegant form, with verses and stanzas showing inner symmetry of thought. In mathematics, we hate at school, not we, but most of the students, is not the mathematics that is part of our soul that we will always love. Leibniz said a sentence that I like. Music is the pleasure the human soul experiences from counting without being aware that it is counting. It is true of all arts, for symmetry and pattern are the manifestation of mathematics. I want to read also a poem by Morris Bishop that is entitled E equals to MC squared. So that's very nice. What was our trust? We trust not. What was our faith? We doubt. Whether we must or not, we may debate about. The soul, perhaps, is a gust of gas, and wrong is form of right, but we know that energy equals mass by the square of the speed of light. What we have known, we know not. What we have proved, a view. Life is a tangle for not. But one thing still is sure. Come, little lad, come, little lass. Your docile creed recites, we know that energy equals mass by the square of the speed of light. Another important field, of course, of symmetry in that is the theory of symmetry applied to the ornamental art. There are examples of cooperation between artists and scientists, especially in modern art, but not only in connection with geometric abstraction. Also, art historians use symmetry to characterize the form of qualities of a work. So, because symmetry is the basic principle of all artistic rules. And we can see here in this picture that a motif can have its own symmetry beyond that of the overall design. In this example, although the overall pattern exhibits rotation symmetry, the motif itself has a design with reflection symmetry. But this picture is shows symmetry, but it's very boring, at least I think so. The one below is more interesting because it's something different. Maybe you don't, you can see it so clearly, but there are three patterns that are different in color. In the original were red, but this is written in black and white, so you can see this. However, I like most the second one because it has something that break the wall symmetry of the work, the picture. So I have to ask this question. Could a computer generate an entire symbol, a right point, by putting some simple patterns in it and applying every symmetry? The answer is this. I provide this definition. The math is in symmetry. The art is in choosing the best option for your melody. The last question, did I talk about symmetry of art or the art of symmetry?
Symmetry of physical experiments suggests that something is observed and invariant, and this shows a very important connection between symmetry and conservation. The three conservation symmetries that we talk about are CPT. C stands for charge propagation, which is an inversion of charge. Basically, that's taking matter and turning it into antimatter. Then there's parity, which is inversion of space coordinates, and time reversal, which is the order in which things fall. And if you change these three symmetries, the result you get could still occur in the natural world. And for most forces, even if you change only one symmetry, it will still work, it's still possible. However, there's no time symmetry in the collective behavior of many particles, and this is because of probability. And as we know, the second law of thermodynamics says that entropy must either stay the same or increase the system. And obviously, if you play the cycle backwards, then the effect decreases, and that's impossible. And it's actually interesting to find that there isn't any physical law that says it's impossible. Theoretically, you can find set conditions that would allow entropy to go backwards. The only problem is that the probability is so tiny that it just doesn't. The weak force occasionally violates CP concentration with certain decay of certain mesons, and this may explain why there's more matter than antimatter in the force. Because if the charge conjugation is violated, that means that matter and antimatter aren't on the same footing, and that would explain why there's mostly matter in the force. That could be a very interesting topic, and it's currently under investigation. Also, the connection of C and PT suggests a meaningful relationship between space-time and the structure of particles, because C refers to the structure of particles, and the PT is referring to space-time, and since they are somehow connected, it could give an interesting connection between space-time and the structure of particles. And here I just have some equations that there are several proposed arrows of time, listed down there, and the three major ones that are discussed in the most series There are only three that we have considered so far. The graviton is the question mark. It's sometimes still pretty much standard model. But the important thing to notice is that the spins are whole numbers here, and they're half here, but the bosons don't come up here, so there's only one for each of those. So basically, what supersymmetry is trying to figure out a way to somehow connect fermions and bosons, so you can come up with a theory that makes the two interchangeable. And in terms of physics in and of itself, that would be a huge leap forward in terms of unification. So that's basically what supersymmetry is. Right? So it implies that for every fermion, there's a corresponding boson. Now, obviously, in the standard model we have here, you don't see that. There are 12 fermions and only bosons. So obviously the particles that would be partners, we haven't observed that, which means that they must have very large masses, because that's why we can see them, because our accelerators are powerful. Now, theoretically, in the universe, you have like, just going to be symmetric particles. They ideally have the same mass. But obviously that isn't true. But there are several theories that can explain this. I don't know if all of you are familiar with the electroweak theory and the Higgs field, so I'll just go over that really briefly. Basically, how much time do I have? Okay, so basically what happens is this. When the scientists way back when were trying to unify electromagnetism and heat force, you have two corresponding photons for them. You have photon and W and Z particles. Now the thing is that photon has no mass, but the W and Z particles are very massive. So if you're going to unify them, you need to have them at the same mass at some point. So the way that scientists came up with a way to actually unify them was by introducing another boson, another field, the Higgs field and the Higgs boson. And what that actually did was to break the symmetry between electromagnetism and the weak force so that the boson and the weak force ended up with lots of mass. And I won't get into too many details, but basically scientists have postulated that the same sort of thing must have happened with the particles and sparkles, that there must have been some other field that set, that broke the symmetry between the two. And as of yet, we don't know what that is, but generally, the supersymmetric standard model that did exist would look like that, where you have a whole bunch of other particles that correspond with the other one. So for each fermion, there's another result. So we have leptons and synaptons, quarks and scores. And then for the photon, you have a protein and ions and blues and everything. Okay, now this looks really complicated. Like, you think, well, why? Why would you introduce a concept that would just make the standard model so much bigger than it is? But the thing that Stefan's group didn't mention that I'm going to talk about is that supersymmetry actually solves quite a lot of problems that it creates. And the first thing actually has to do with Higgs field. Now, electroweak has become really accepted and almost taken for granted in some areas, but there's actually a little problem. The calculated energy density of the Higgs field is actually an extremely large number, and if it was actually that large, we definitely know about it. So one area of supersymmetry helps is that when you include supersymmetric particles in the vacuum fluctuations in the universe, you get Higgs density that's much, much less than the number, because you have all these superparticles with Higgs as well as your regular particles. So it helps to solve the Higgs problem and make electroweak actually work, which is extremely important for the grand unification. The second thing that it does is that Tahara briefly mentioned it, but in terms of gut itself, what she has ideally is trying to unify all the forces into merging into one distinct force. And that's where electroweak unified the electromagnetic force and the weak force. And if you go higher up in energy, about 10 to the power of 15 degrees Kelvin. Yeah, billion electron volts, billion electron volts, you get a strong force going along with your two. But the problem is that for an ideal gut, you have them coming to the same strength at the same energy. But really, you don't. And this is actually a picture in Brian Green's book. And you see here that without supersymmetry in the vacuum fluctuations, you don't have them merging nicely here. But if you include supersymmetry, then you have all three forces coming together at the same strength. So supersymmetry, many people believe, is integral to grand unification. And finally, one of the most popular theories out there today is string theory. And we already can electron this, but supersymmetry actually plays an essential role in string theory. So we already talked about, the tacking, how without supersymmetry you end up with a ground state that allows for a particle to have negative energy, which defies the speed of light constant. But if you include supersymmetry, then get rid of the tacking. So that's why supersymmetry is part of super string theory, hence the super string theory. And supersymmetry actually arose when string theory was in its infancy. So supersymmetry actually came from string theory originally. So basically, on the whole, you have this whole idea of symmetry all around us. You have it in art, you have it constantly in time, and ideally you also have it in the very stuff that matters to you. So symmetry as a tool means finding connections between things. And in physics, whose goal is to simplify, symmetry plays a crucial role. And so if there is a theory of everything, symmetry will play a role that is integral, and possibly even in supersymmetry, you have supersymmetry. That's why many people believe in supersymmetry, because it means unification. And so that's basically what our whole group is talking about, that symmetry all around us exists, and in a way it's kind of, it makes physics beautiful, because when you find connections, physics related to art also. So that's what he's